So, David Jell, I think you all know earlier. Lisa Craddock, Tom Andrews, Sean Gregory, and of course Suzanne. So, thank you all for participating so enthusiastically this afternoon. Suzanne and I were going around the various groups, and at one point there was so much discussion going on, it's hard to actually write down all the feedback. But Suzanne's now going to report back on some of the main themes that have emerged.
Je peux parler en français cet après-midi, car il me semble que la langue et la traduction est très importante. That's the first time I've spoken French in 10 years, guys. But it struck me this afternoon that the most important thing, I think, for me that was emerging throughout the breakout rooms was the whole issue of language and what language we use, both in terms of the specific words that we use to describe things, processes, actions, people, but also in terms of their translatability, their traduction, and the way in which they might translate into different contexts or be understood by different people. So I don't know whether we need some kind of artworks Scrabble, artworks Bingo, I don't know. But there's something quite interesting, I think, that needs to be unraveled a little bit further in relation to language. And that also seems to relate to the discourse and to the fact that there's very little critical discourse in relation to this practice. There's great practice, and we've been doing it for a very long time, but there's very little critical discourse in relation to it. And that there is not visible because we're not making it visible. And I think that comes back again and links, probably all of these things are loops that link back to language, because there was a lot of talk about status and about how the status of the work was low, and a lot of questions around whether that was because the artists themselves valued the work lower than the actual art itself, or whether economically, you know, whether there's an economic climate surrounding that, despite the fact that artists can earn more from participatory work than probably from their art, that there may be a kind of a strange economic thing going on. So, you know, this notion of status then links, I think, to the language, to the discourse. Are we communicating in the right language to the right people in order to actually create better status for the work? What's the language that we're using with funders? Are we using their language, responding to their language, and shifting our language as policymakers' language changes in a way which isn't aligned with the practice and with what we believe the practice to be? And how do we get more stakeholders involved if we're not using the right language to communicate with them, a language that they can understand? And linked to that, there were some really interesting points beginning to emerge about how we engage with stakeholders, how we engage with policymakers, how we advocate for work. And again, it relates to the metaphor of language for me. The best way you learn a language is when you are in situ and you're speaking it and you're hearing it and you're passively absorbing it. So, you know, it goes back to Susan's point this morning. How do we make sure that we're engaging key policymakers or key funders or decision makers? How do we make sure that they understand the work, both through the language that we use and through the way in which we engage them with it, i.e. can we engage them with the practice, rather than just talking to them about it? There are a whole host of other things, and just one or two that I want to draw attention to. The importance of values. We talk a lot about the knowledge, the skills, the competencies that are required for artists to work in participatory settings. But what about the importance of values? If the values are right, do the skills follow? Do the competencies follow? So, you know, there's something to unravel, I think, there. And then a final point on the importance of organisations. And I think David alluded to this morning when he was talking about the ways in which organisations can actually support artists and can effectively kind of create a network and a support structure within which experimentation and risk and failure, you know, can all be kind of constructed and supported and made sustained, maintained, what's the word I want, but kind of held up. I've got all of the notes. We'll draw together all of the notes into some kind of document. But I think, broadly speaking, that is what I heard wandering around the groups.
Thank you very much, and there will be an opportunity for anybody to feed in just towards the end of the next session if there's anything you feel that's been left out of those discussions or the resume of the day. One of the things that just struck me, we were talking this morning about the absence of creativity within mainstream management, language. We've been talking about the importance of language to describe what we do, and I was thinking about Steve Jobs, who was probably one of the people that did bring creativity into very successful financial management. And he said, I thought it was a very succinct way of putting it, that he knew when a design was finished and when it was ready to go to market because he wanted to lick it. And I thought that was such a really good way of communicating that very complex process. And maybe we need some kind of sound bites like that that just get the point across really effectively. Anyway, on to our last session now, which is a panel discussion and a discussion with you, I hope, in terms of what we still need to explore. What are the things that we're not talking about? What are the next steps? So I'm going to go around the table and I'll start with David and would like your comments on that, please.
Sure. So, yeah, reflecting on this, two quick thoughts. I think both actually follow on from lots of the things that Suzanne was just saying. The first is how organisations can become more porous, particularly larger organisations. I think we ran a programme called The Independents here, which a couple of people referred to earlier on today, and the idea of that programme was to offer independent artists, practitioners, leadership development in the broadest sense of that term by offering them an insight into how an organisation like Battersea Arts Centre worked. And of course, what happened in that actually the organisation got as much, if not more, from all of those independent practitioners and leaders than those independent practitioners did. So how could organisations become more porous and more fluid? And I guess my second thought is, I guess, related to that. Just hearing you talk then about participation and language, we used to have at Battersea Arts Centre a participation team. So we have participate producers. Before that, we used to have education officers. We've got rid of all of that now, and everybody in our producing team now works as a producer, which in itself is a piece of language. But basically, they're people who make things happen. And they work across all of the different sort of all of the different spectrums or areas or partnerships with which we work. And I wonder whether one thing that we're not talking about when we have these debates around learning and participation is actually about art form development, which is actually, if you think about theatre, for example, which is the art form I work in, it is peculiarly old-fashioned, peculiarly hierarchical. If you think about most of the theatres you walk into in this country, you behave as an audience member often extremely passively in terms of the work that you experience. And certainly something we've noticed since we've connected our participate team and our theatre team, is that our theatre, the work that we make, has become a whole lot more participatory, both in the way it's created, but also in the way it's shared. So I wonder whether art form development across different art forms is also a way to, I guess, push and further participation.
Thank you very much. And I'd just like to echo that. When we at Sirius started doing participation works on a very large scale, but even mainstream places like Barbican, one of the things that really struck us as those two worlds came together was just how excited the artists were at the prospect of engaging with so many people at such a high artistic level. And so I think you know, that's something I'd really like to echo, that it does seem strange sometimes to have those two worlds so disconnected, and it'd be very good to get feedback about the progress that's being made in organisations along those lines. Anyway, to Lisa.
Okay. Can everyone hear me okay? Observations on the day today. Something that really struck me this morning was when Joshua mentioned about the simple thing is that organisations are not understanding the competencies of the artists that artists are bringing as leaders. And the best way an institution could help us is by understanding. And this has been a recurring theme for me today and in discussions that have happened this afternoon as well, to the point where I think I blurted out, maybe employers need training, not artists. Of course, artists, we've been talking about this programme about professional development and framework and pathways for artists. And I think it's really important that we've got a job to do to raise the status for artists who are delivering great work and identify where that great work is. But also that there is a job to do to fight and have that advocacy role as well. And picking up on Suzanne's point just now about language, what I heard was, are we speaking funders' language? And I immediately thought, are we changing funders' language? Are we shifting it? Are we shifting employers' language to be able to understand the competences of the artist?
Thank you very much. And now to Sean.
Thanks very much. Just a couple of points to follow on. I think a key thing that's been coming up is this whole question of training and development, these pathways and routes that could be developed for not just established artists but emerging ones. And that there's scope to really develop new paradigms of training and development which are not just tied into some of the more formal, be it bachelor's or master's, that could be part of the offer. But you could actually create a very interesting sort of mixed economy, mixed learning community of young people, established artists who are coming in through CPD and working alongside maybe full-time students, as well as the sort of academic sector as well. So I think we could really push the boundaries in terms of what the training and development and what progression means in relation to that. And critical, one thing that came up this afternoon is what do artists themselves have to say about what's important in relation to that? There's still a huge amount of work, I think, to be done in terms of the so-called professional sector itself of artists, the community of artists, the arts organisations, the collectives, the communities around that, and the so-called academic or the training world. We've talked a lot about linking those more, but I think this forum is a very, very, is an ideal forum for that sort of to be really developed. And a big next step for us through Artworks is going to be starting sort of connecting conversations almost between these relevant parties, with respective parties, to move on to the next stage. Another couple of quick key things, just in terms of impact, this came up this afternoon as well. So where do we think impact lies and where does the impact actually lie? And I think sometimes we sort of can look at things through the wrong end of the telescope, and I think that relates then to the training and the actual work itself. We also in talking about effective leadership, and it goes back to the training as well, that there are people who might be seen as literate in terms of their artistry or in any other areas of that work, but that there are young people and other people who have social and emotional intelligences that are really suited to leading things, and they do it very, very naturally. How can we harness the potential of those sorts of people and build them into this area and field we're talking about? One last thing that is also, and I guess it's inevitable, that the talk of just interrogating what we actually mean by an artist, and whether the more you interrogate that, whether when you talk about an emerging artist, you are talking about an emerging person as much as an artist, and that the context that those people go into and then apply their skills, which of course should include creativity, collaboration, and artistic sensibility, but you can come at that from lots of different ways. And if we can set up frameworks and contexts for that to thrive in as many different ways as possible, then you will really start to see the art forms themselves develop and grow and move into new places as well as the more established.
Sure, can I just pick up your first point there? In the scenario that you said you wanted us to head towards, what do you think are the greatest barriers to that at the moment, that happening?
I think, and I sort of touched on it this morning, in some senses, I think certainly if you look at young people, the skills they have and the potential they have is the sort of motivation they have to go on into, say, training and developing in the arts world, it doesn't fit what's on offer at the moment within the formal sector, the higher education sector, often. Sometimes it does, but I think sometimes it doesn't. So I think there needs to be a much closer dialogue between what we see coming, what is actually there on offer in terms of talent potential for young people, and what's actually there within the higher education sector.
Thank you. And then I'm over to Tom.
Can you hear me now? Does the microphone work? Okay. My brain's a bit slow, especially after having cake. And I knew I'd have to make an observation, so I thought I'm going to make a pithy observation, and I'll get the exact line when I'm sitting on the train. So during today, I've jotted down just words that have come up in talks, come up in the workshops, and I've done a little top 10 of all the words that have been most popular throughout today. So here's my top 10 of words that have come up from today. In at number 10 is vision. At number 9 is values and ethics. Number 8 is catalyst. Number 7 is legacy. Number 6 is empowering. Number 5 is failure. Number 4 is reflection. Number 3, people and people at the heart. Number 2 is questions. And number 1, any guesses? No, not creativity. Artists, no. Connections. Partnerships. That seemed to come up a lot this morning. Connections and partnerships. I was surprised the cakes didn't come up more, actually, certainly in the afternoon. So there are a whole range of different things, and the couple of observations that I wanted to make just in regard to things to be addressed. One around... one about walkie-talkies. one about connections, which follows up what David was saying. About this area so diverse, often we're put in boxes of types of art form or types of practice. And actually, I think the beauty is it when there's different types of art form, different people coming together. But also, it would be nice in another event where we come together, we open it up to other people that work creatively. So youth leaders, to community activists, to academics, to digital pioneers. Different people that use creativity in different ways, rather than just talk within the arts world, of course across it, but it would be great to also get those other distinct voices as well. And just the second point that we've mentioned about status, but I think there's something about celebration as well, that we all come together, do something, and then we go off in our own world. And I think there's something to explore about, is there some sort of event? Is there some sort of conference? Is there some sort of celebration where small and large across art forms can come together and demonstrate the value of this work? It'd just be interesting to see if there's any legs in something like that.
Thank you very much. And I think one of the observations I had going around the various groups was a sort of an expansion on the whole discussion around failure. And there was one sentence, I think, Catherine Dean, actually, I'm going to attribute this to, where she said, how do you balance the right of the artist to experiment and to fail with the need not to fail the participants? And that was one of the issues for me, which is really something which I hope comes out in the discussions. And it would be great at the end of this process if we could have drawn some conclusions about that issue, because it seemed very interesting. And then that was followed by a whole discussion about the theory of competent failure and incompetent failure. So I'm sure Catherine will continue that if you want to later. But for me, that was just a very interesting area.